You're listening to Cannabis Health Radio. Here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to another episode of Cannabis Health Radio. I'm Ian Jessup. Corey Yelland is away today. The world's oldest woman, who passed away at the ripe old age of 125, gave credit for her longevity to daily use of cannabis and palm leaf wine, which is common in her native India. As the stigma against cannabis is slowly being eroded, more and more seniors are using cannabis to supplement or replace prescription drugs. Today we're talking to a man whose elderly mother takes cannabis and is better for it. And joining us from Ottawa, Canada, is Lewis Berry. Lewis, thanks very much for doing this.
Thank you, Ian. It's certainly a pleasure to join you today.
Tell us the story of how your mother got involved with cannabis.
Well, my mother became involved with cannabis because she had come down with a very severe case of shingles. This is now going back about 2.5 years ago. And it was so severe at the time that it was on her face and in her ear and in her mouth, and she couldn't wear her false teeth. She couldn't put makeup on. Really, she couldn't put anything on her face except water. So you can imagine how upsetting that was, both to be living with that amount of pain and the effect that that would have on the quality of her life. So for many months, she struggled with that, with some amount of success with other medications that she was on. She did not want to take opiates and other narcotics or hydromorphine, for example. And so she was living with that very severe pain. And the option came up in the context of also my father's situation to have a cannabis oil as an option to treat the pain. And it worked. It worked right away. It didn't completely take away the pain at that time, but it significantly reduced the pain. And for her, it made a very important difference in her ability to both manage that pain and maintain a quality of life that was not interrupted so badly by the pain that she was still experiencing. She's one of the few people who has a permanent nerve damage as a result of shingles. So it's a condition that she lives with and probably will live with for the rest of her life. And, you know, since taking cannabis, she's not she's able to sleep through the night and able to sort of take the take away that pain.
How old is your mother?
She's 80 now. And I was chuckling when you referred to her as an elderly woman, because my mother would hates the thought of her age and takes pride in the fact that she feels youthful and certainly doesn't feel her age. So she's 80 now. She was 79 when she began to take cannabis.
Well, I didn't mean to use that in a pejorative sense.
Of course not. Yeah.
No, anyone who does what your mother does at the age of 80 is really young at heart.
Exactly.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, how did she react to using the cannabis initially?
Well, when she first started using it, she used two things. She tried an oil product, and she didn't react very well to that. She did not like the oil. Like, when she took it orally, it gave her a headache, and she didn't like it. So she began to use it topically with the oil infused into a lotion, and that's what worked very well for her. She had absolutely no side effects, and it took away the pain substantively. So I think as soon as, you know, really the first day, once she caught on to this idea that she could use it infused in a lotion, that was a sort of a no going back moment, because she realized at that point that she had something that was working, which was so important for her.
Lewis, what was her attitude toward cannabis prior to trying it?
Well, I think if she was like many people of her generation, she was very reluctant because she had her own sort of notions or stereotypes about what that would mean and what people would think if they found out about it. You know, I think that that was very typical. She still has some sensitivity around that, because people do carry a lot of myths and judgments around it. And there's no reason for people to really know that she's using it. But fundamentally, it works for her. And so at the end of the day, that's what's most important. And she has no personal issues with using it at this point at all.
Did she notice any other changes besides helping her shingles as a result of using this cannabis lotion?
I don't think so. I mean, to be honest, I think that was the key thing, that was her key motivation for using the product, and that's where she saw the results.
Now, did you notice any changes in her when she started using it, such as attitude, behavior, things like that?
Well, I think the key thing is that when the person's not living with such severe pain, it makes them more at ease and able to be sort of more content and not struggling with that constant pain. So I think that it was nice to see that because her pain was so severe, and it's not nice to have to see somebody live with that. So I think what I would have observed is the fact that her pain wasn't something coming up in conversation all the time. It would come up only if we asked her, but she was managing it, and it was working, and it wasn't interfering with her life in the same way anymore.
One of the things that those of us who don't deal with pain can't understand is the pain that people go through. And I refer to an interview we did with a woman in Seattle who had MS. And she says the pain is all-consuming. It just controls every waking moment for her. And the use of cannabis has relieved that pain somewhat. And it's probably the same situation with your mother.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the pain is, at the very least, it's a distraction, and at worst, it's debilitating. So for her, it was often somewhere on that scale. And now that it's properly managed, it's not really an issue at all. And the good part of the story is that she has more recently begun to take a CBD oil, and which she takes systemically, so she's not applying it topically. She still applies the cannabis-infused lotion to her face, but she's now taking the CBD oil orally, and it has basically taken away all of the pain. So, which is remarkable, because she's now no longer taking Advil and Tylenol. She supplements with the lotion, and she still has some medication, you know, that's important because of her shingles condition. But basically, since she's now on a proper dosage of CBD oil systemically, the pain is basically gone, and she's not having to, she's not losing sleep anymore. She's not having to take painkillers in the middle of the night, except on an exceptional basis. And she tops off with the cannabis, the THC-infused lotion, as she needs to. And the two of them together have worked beautifully. And the nice thing is that she's not had to live with the pain, and she's not had to make the decision to take opiates or some other form of medication that would carry all sorts of other risks and side effects.
Was she on other medications prior to taking cannabis?
For pain, yes. She's tried a number of different medications that were prescribed by her doctor, none of which were effective in dealing with them. Now, some of the medications were covered by her health insurance, some were not. So, you know, it was frustrating because she was having to try these different medications and not getting proper relief. So now the fact that she's got basically total relief from her pain, given that she's using the combination now of the CBD oil and the THC-infused lotion, it's not an issue anymore. Of course, she has to still now pay for the CBD oil, so that's not inexpensive for some people, but it's well worth it because the pain's gone.
What would the CBD oil cost in Ottawa?
Well, I think the CBD oil from the supplier that the licensed producer she obtains it from is about $95 a bottle, and depending for 40 milliliters, and depending upon how much one requires, you know, you could be using anywhere between one and four bottles a month. So, you know, it could be hundreds of dollars a month. Now, for her, she's lucky that a fairly low amount works, and so, you know, it probably will end up costing her about $100 a month, and that's well worth it.
When she started to get relief by using cannabis, did she say to you, "Lewis, why didn't I take this earlier?"
I have to say honestly, no, because she wasn't aware of it, and we weren't aware of it, but she was just happy to have it. And I think had she known it was around, or had she declined the option to take that for a year and not been open to it, she would have regretted it. But she was very receptive when I suggested it to her. I think it took a half hour to convince her to consider it, because when you've lived with extreme pain, you'll do almost anything to try to address it.
Try to escape it. That's right. Now, you have to tell me the story about your mother skydiving.
Yeah. So, well, I think, you know, one of the things about my mother is that she's a very adventuresome lady. And after the passing of my father about a year and a half ago, she sort of embarked on some new adventures, and with each of her grandchildren, she's wanting to do some special activities. So this past July, she went skydiving with my daughter, who's 19, and it was tandem skydiving outside of Ottawa. So they did a 13,000-foot tandem jump, we got the package where it was all videotaped and put it on Facebook, and it's gone viral with almost 10,000 views. So it's really, I think, a testament to how people who want to be vibrant and vital and healthy in their life and active in whatever way is important to them, that, you know, cannabis is one of the possibilities to help them with that. And for her, you know, that's some of these adventures that she wants to do with her kids, her grandkids. For somebody else, it might be something, a different kind of adventure. But certainly she's got that spirit of enthusiasm and is willing to do those kinds of things.
You know, I think we should post that, share that video of your mother, because it was marvelous to see a woman of her age, her young age, I should say, tell her her young age,
yes,
skydiving. Because, and one of the things I didn't quite get at the very end, she said, God, I was nervous going into the plane. Is that what she said?
Well, she was nervous. It was hard to let go getting when the fellow she was with was wanting to jump out of the plane. You know, it's hard to let go and actually jump out of the aircraft.
She was great.
She was. And, you know, she has a great attitude about things like that. And I think she's an inspiration for not just her family, but for many of her peers and for many young people as well, because she's got that sense of openness and excitement and willingness to try and do different things. And certainly it's something that we all admire and appreciate about her. Last year, she did the edge walk at the CN Tower. So she did the walk outside the edge of the CN Tower, where you climb out and hang over the edge. And that was her first adventure. And this year was her skydiving. So
have you been skydiving yourself?
I haven't been, no.
My cowardly son, she's saying.
No, she wanted me to go, but I thought, you know, it was a kind of an experience for her and my daughter. And and I'll have other opportunities. I have a few years behind her to catch up.
Yeah, you do. Now, tell me about your father, who passed away about a year and a half ago. And was he using cannabis as well?
So my father, as you say, passed away in April of 2016. And he had been ill for quite a number of months. And had been hospitalized in January. And he passed away at 88. So he was hospitalized after Christmas because he had fallen and re-injured his back. He had experienced a broken back about 35 years earlier. And so when he was hospitalized, he was dealing with a lot of pain from his back and a whole bunch of other issues because, of course, at that age, he had a history of heart disease and a form of cancer and a number of conditions. So when he was discharged to come home, he was palliative. We knew, and he wanted to die at home, and we wanted to be there and support him in doing so. And when he came home, he was, of course, like many people at that stage of life and with many medical conditions, he was on nearly 20 prescriptions and 3 narcotics. And it sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, but it's not actually that uncommon. What happened was I realized at the time, and with his doctor's support, that cannabis was maybe an option to deal with the pain control, with the anxiety, with some of the other issues that were happening sort of cognitively, because he had some stress issues. That's why he was on Hydromorph, an antipsychotic, an anti-anxiety medication. And so we were able to get him on a cannabis oil, and that oil allowed us to effectively, within not much more than a week, have him no longer taking the Hydromorph, the morphine, the anti-anxiety medication, and the antipsychotic medication. And it was really a remarkable positive experience.
What was it like for him knowing that he was going to die?
Well, you know what, I think my father was a very kind of spiritually resolved man, and I don't think most people want to die, but he embraced that whole process, and he was with the family in the best way he could be for as long as he could be. And we were obviously very fortunate to be able to have that time with him. And he was a very open man when it came to different kinds of, you know, treatments that might help him. And so we felt comfortable that cannabis was a solution, you know, an option. And especially considering that he was on so many other medications and that those were affecting his ability to think and clearly, and, you know, had all sorts of side effects. So, you know, it was a decision that I think we felt was the right decision for him and one that worked out very well.
When he was on cannabis and he was near the end, did his quality of life improve?
Yes. Well, I think, you know, as you can imagine, anybody who's taking, you know, some form of morphine and anti-anxiety medication, like benzodiazepams or antipsychotics medication, they're not able to think clearly. They're in that sort of that drugged, mentally drugged state. And when we were able to get him off of that, I say that in many respects, we had our father back, because he still had no memory because he had severe dementia. So it's not like he could remember more than 1 minute in the past and 1 minute in the future. But he was clear thinking. So he was present in the moment and with us, and he was aware that we were with him. So what happened was he was no longer in that state of being kind of medicated in a way that traditionally many people or seniors at their end of life would be. And he was not experiencing pain, because from the moment he started taking the cannabis oil, the pain was gone. The pain was managed very quickly. The sleep, he was sleeping. He had, the anxiety was gone. And so we had to taper him off some other medication, again, with the support of his physician and a nurse. So we did that in a guided way, and that's so important. But, you know, after a week or 10 days, he was clear of those kind of medications that would interfere with some of his thinking to the limited extent that he could think at that stage. And so his quality of life was much better, because he was able to interact in conversations. He was able to be fully observant about what was going on, and he was able to enjoy and appreciate the people and the love around him.
Lewis, your parents were of the first generation to go through the stigmatization of cannabis. And I'm wondering, with your parents' use of cannabis, did that have any influence on your views of it?
Well, absolutely, because I think for me, having worked in the health system for most of my career, almost 30 years, it was so compelling for me to see how effective cannabis could be in treating both my father in that end stage of his life, and make that a much easier process for him, and in treating my mother, who is still a vibrant woman, who wants to be vital and vibrant and do exciting things. In both of those scenarios, the cannabis was a significant factor in improving their quality of life. And so it was so convincing for me that I switched most of my consulting practice into the cannabis sector, because I thought there's really something here that as a health system and a medical community, that the medical community needs to recognize, that we have to get past our hang-ups about this, our myths and our conceptions, preconceptions about it, and see that there's something very, very, potentially very, very useful for people that can fundamentally make people's lives better. And that said, it's nothing is without consequence, and, you know, we need to better understand it. So, you know, we need to take an objective view of all of it. But my personal experience was very, very positive and compelling.
Tell us about your company, Cannab Intel. What does it do?
Cannab Intel. So I work with primarily with policymakers and businesses in the cannabis space and healthcare practitioners. I was focusing primarily in the medical cannabis space because my intention was to help sort of facilitate that agenda. And I'm more recently working more broadly within the recreational space as well. For me, having a healthcare or a health system background, it's really looking at cannabis from a health perspective and a public health perspective. So I'm not advocating for the use of cannabis for recreational purposes so much as I am saying that, you know, it has a place medically, and if it's being consumed recreationally, we need to be as informed as possible and responsible and all those good things. So I now work in that space with policymakers and educators and businesses, and less with the public, although I do have some information on my website for public as well, and I have links to research resources and places where you can find contact information and information to work with, I guess.
Have you learned anything about cannabis from your daughter?
Well, my 19-year-old daughter, I think, you know, like many teenagers, is exposed to it. And I think I'm not sure what I've learned from her per se. I think what has happened as a result of the experience with my parents is that the conversation has been opened up. The ability to have an open dialogue with her about, you know, what cannabis means for her as a young adult, and, you know, what its place might be in from a medical perspective or recreationally at different stages of life, I think it's opened up that dialogue. My exposure has caused me to be any of the issues I had or myths or preconceptions or hangups to be neutralized. So I'm much more able to have those conversations in a balanced way, and I think in a properly informed way, and have those with her.
Lewis, you and I are the same generation, and I don't think there would be any difference in our opinion. My view of cannabis prior to interviewing Corey when I was in commercial radio, my view of cannabis was that it was strictly from the recreation side. I didn't know that much about how cannabis can benefit us medically. And once I learned that, I did a 180, because I think this is a very, very powerful, safe medication, and I think it's going to take generations before it is truly accepted by the medical community.
I absolutely 100% agree with you, and I think it will take many years, and it will be decades as we continue to understand the absolute power and potential for cannabis as a medication. The science is just beginning. I mean, there's a lot of science now, but we're going to have exponentially more science within the next 5 and 10 years, and we're going to be doing things with cannabis that we've not imagined. Some of the research that's coming out now and the preclinical trials that show the potential effectiveness for treatment of stroke recovery and all sorts of areas that are hugely significant for people who've experienced severe trauma in their lives, and so there's a huge potential opportunity there. And certainly my eyes have been open to that, and I'm a very strong believer in that. And I think at the same time, we need to elevate the level of sort of solid understanding and facts across the board, because the flip side of this is there's a lot of people who will say cannabis has no side effects, it'll never hurt you. And in reality, that's not entirely true either. They'll say nobody ever died of cannabis. It depends how you think about it, but many people have been in car accidents because of cannabis and have died. And I know from my father that if you take too much cannabis, you can't stand up the next morning, and you could still fall and die because you were effectively stoned. So, you know, I think we need to look at cannabis in a much more objective way, and hopefully, and I know it will, the literature and the scientific evidence will evolve, because there's a huge movement toward that now at every level. And we see that at all levels of the population, including seniors.
What do you think is going to happen on July 1st of 2018, when cannabis is legalized both medically and recreationally in Canada?
Well, I think my assumption and my hope would be that there's a lot of public education that occurs before then, and that it actually is legalized on a day other than July 1st, and that in many respects, it will be a day like no other, and there's, in the sense that many people are already using cannabis. There'll be a few more. But I really hope that there's a public education campaign before then, so that people who are considering using it and those who use it now are more educated than they are now. They're informed about, you know, if you're going to use it, don't drive. If you're going to use it, this is what to expect. All those kinds of considerations. Because truthfully, there's been very, very little really good public education concerning cannabis for the last number of decades. So I hope that come the date of legalization, that it will be on the heels of some really good public education, and that transition into a recreational legal regime or market will be one that will be not carrying with it a lot of negative consequences, whether it's people being stoned in the park and annoying their neighbors, or people getting into car accidents. And I think what we've seen in some jurisdictions is that where that public education didn't occur, there was a blip of sort of negative not side effects, but negative consequences. I'm hoping that in Canada we can avoid that.
Why do you say a day other than July 1st, which is Canada Day, which is the equivalent of July 4th in the United States? Why do you say a different day?
I think that there's enough going on in Canada Day. The last thing we would want to do is sort of introduce, you know, a bunch of new cannabis smokers or existing cannabis smokers into the Canada Day parties across the country at Parliament Hill or across the country, because I think when it is introduced, there's going to come with it a transition period for law enforcement and you know, where can you consume and not consume, and where can you smoke and not smoke, and where can you vape and not vape, and where can you use so all of those kinds of things. And I think that transition period is going to be a bit bumpy, and it's better to occur separate from what is already a major public event. So my personal, you know, advice, if I were advising policymakers, would be to do it before or after July 1st.
Lewis, your background is in healthcare, And one of the things that I've noticed in talking to experts in this field is that the doctors and the medical professionals in the healthcare industry are really ignorant of the use of cannabis, totally ignorant. And some of them are very resistant to its use. What's your view?
Absolutely. And I think that's understandable, but I don't think it's excusable, to be quite frank about it. I think that on one hand, I appreciate that there needs to be, you know, traditional scientific support and all those kinds of things. And we know that we don't have enough of that. And so I get that, you know, that cannabis doesn't fit neatly into the existing kind of evidence paradigm that underpins established medical practice. Having said that, the potential to help people like my mother or my father is so significant, or the potential to help people like children who are having seizures, multiple or hundreds of seizures a day, is so significant that my personal view is that it's irresponsible or unethical for physicians not to consider enabling patients to use or consider cannabis as a medical treatment. So if they're not personally comfortable prescribing, and I get that they would not be, because until even now, there aren't really well-established guidelines around prescribing, but increasingly there are. At this stage, there's more and more cannabinoid practices or cannabis clinics where there are specialists. And in most major centers, it's possible for physicians to make those referrals. And I think, you know, it's really incumbent upon all physicians to challenge their own beliefs and to say, okay, I know I was never taught about the endocannabinoid system when I went to medical school 30 years ago, but I can't deny this potential solution to my patients. And that's the challenge that I put forth on a regular basis to the people in the healthcare system, including physicians that I come into contact with. It's important to be able to improve the quality of life for Canadians and for patients and people.
Now, your mother, does she share her cannabis use with others?
She doesn't share her cannabis. And she doesn't really tell anybody about her cannabis use. You know, she's even somewhat, I think, uncomfortable about the fact that we're having this conversation to some extent. But she knows that it works. And she knows that the bigger cause here is worth the discussion. And so in the small town where she lives, you know, it's not something that she talks to people about. There's no need for her to talk to people about it. She has no duty to explain that to anybody or to justify her choices. The fact of the matter is that she's the one living with this severe pain, and this works for her. And at the end of the day, nothing else matters. And she doesn't feel compelled or doesn't want to have to explain that to people.
What's on her bucket list next?
Well, one of the things on her bucket list is to do something with each of her grandchildren. So she has a younger granddaughter who wants to go zip lining. So they've got that being planned. She's got another younger granddaughter who wants to go skydiving. So she's probably going to be going skydiving again in Toronto the next time she's out east. She's not completely convinced she wants to do a 13,000 foot jump with a 25 second free fall at 120 miles an hour, because that's a bit of an aggressive experience. But she certainly is very open to doing the skydiving again with her second granddaughter. And she's in discussion with her grandson, one of my nephews, about what kind of an adventure they're going to do together. And she wants to travel, so she wants to go to New York City. And so she's renewed her passport and maybe to Vegas. And I think she's at that stage of life when you've got health and energy, enthusiasm and interest and a passion and an openness and a willingness to do things that you ought to do them. There's no purpose in waiting. So she's taking that approach.
She's vibrant, isn't she?
Yeah, she's a very active woman. She's got a huge corner lot in the little small town where she lives, where she has this big garden, and she usually gets first or second prize for the Christmas lights and Christmas time. So she takes great pride in her yard and her and is one of those people who's just constantly going and very much very hospitable, and her home is always open to people coming and going. And that's what we want for seniors. I think that's one of the things I wanted to talk about with you, is that, you know, cannabis is one of the things that can help seniors really maintain that quality of life that's important to them. And it doesn't have to be skydiving or jumping or going over the edge of the CN Tower. It's really about whatever is important to each individual person. And, you know, cannabis is one option that I think has both that very strong benefit with potentially very few side effects or no side effects. And you know, that's why it's so important to I think, to promote it.
Louis, a wonderful story about your mother. Anything you'd like to say in conclusion?
No, just that one of the things that I realized as well is that, you know, with people taking prescription medication in seniors and with the children around, it's important for people to make sure that they're keeping their medications protected and locked up. One of the things that I've also done is sort of started a company that sells locking solutions or locking cases and bags for prescription medication and medical cannabis. Because I think as we see people who are using these serious medications, it's important to keep people safe all the time, whether it's keeping the kids out of people's, you know, the cannabis or medication. So I do have a company called lockmygoods.com, and that's offers consumers a place to purchase a way to lock up their medication if anybody's interested in that.
Louis, a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks very much for doing this.
Thank you, Ian. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've been following your podcast for some time, and it's always very informative and highly appreciated. You do great work.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And we're always looking for people to tell their story about the medical use of cannabis. If you'd like to tell your story, send us an email at info@cannabishealthradio.com. Thanks for listening, everyone.
You've been listening to the Cannabis Health Radio podcast. Visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter.